codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron. One podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
You know how I know Allison loves me?
How? How do you know?
It's because I was eating an apple and she didn't punch me in the face.
Yep, that's how you know.
She verbally punched me in the face, but not physically. So people don't like people eating. There's actually a thing, like, there's a name for that.
I have that thing, whatever it is.
Whatever that thing is, you've got it, as does Wayne. The listening of somebody chew drives you batty.
It does.
Are you like that, fine listener? Out of the seven, how many do you think have that affliction?
Nobody likes listening to other people chew.
I love it.
You don't love listening to people chew.
No, I don't at all.
Nobody does.
Depending on how they chew.
I think some people don't notice it, but nobody likes it. Like, some of
us,
like,
some of us chew when we sleep.
That's the soundtrack of my life, chewing.
I'm like myself chewing.
See?
You got a problem. That's just a whole other issue. I like it so much, I chew in my sleep, and I smack my lips, apparently. So I don't believe it, but studies have shown, I guess. Today on the show, Scott's birthday. Hi-yo!
Are we still talking about your birthday?
Birthday month.
Won't it be over by the time this one comes out?
No, it'll be right about at the birthday time almost. April 23rd, kids.
We'll see. Happy birthday to Scott on the Twitter. Mm-hmm. He loves that.
I do. Let's move. Let's do something. This is from Nelligan.ca, a law firm. Excuse me. Apple burp. There can be nothing more Canadian than this. This is an explanation of the Apology Act. And this actually came into force April 23rd.
Is it 2009?
Yeah, it's Ontario.
The Apology Act?
Uh-huh. Ready? The Apology Act came into force in Ontario. The chief effect of the act on liability insurance is that apologies by an insured, which previously could have been used as an evidence of fault or liability, are no longer admissible for this purpose.
So, like, if you get into a car accident and you apologize, that used to be able to be used as proof that you did something wrong?
That you were at fault. Yeah. Secondly, insurers are prevented from denying coverage in the face of an apology by an insured person.
I feel like this is not enacted in the United States.
The act defines as an apology to mean an expression of sympathy or regret, a statement that a person is sorry, or any other words or actions indicating contrition or commiseration, whether or not the words or actions admit fault or liability or imply an admission of fault or liability in connection with the matter to which the words or actions relate. The effect of this expansive definition is that apologies that admit liability, whether expressly or impliedly, may be made without leading inevitably to finding of liability.
So, like, let's say you go to a restaurant and the waiter spills something hot on you and then apologizes. You used to be able to say that, show that they were at fault.
In other words, as this article says, the Apology Act allows insured people to admit liability without the admission of having any legal effect. Critics of this legislation argue that any admission followed by the words "I'm sorry" are protected, making such admissions meaningless. Proponents of the legislation point out that claimants frequently attach a great value to an expression of regret, whether or not that admission produces legal consequences. There's exceptions. The first exception applies where a person apologized while testifying at a civil proceeding. In other words, apologies made in examination for discovery or cross-examination on affidavit or at any step after a proceeding has begun are not protected.
You can't just say "I'm sorry" before you start testifying.
The second exception is found in Section 2.2, which allows apologies to be used as admissions for the purpose of the Provincial Offenses Act. For example, if an insured in a motor vehicle claim is facing charges under the Highway Traffic Act, the Apology Act will not protect the insured's apology from being used against him in the whole Highway Traffic Act.
I'm sorry, I drank that whole case of beer before I got in the car. That does not accept you.
So, yeah. So, for listeners, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I even said that, but how Canadian and wonderful. And I, you know what? Here's the thing. I've seen this where companies, not Ontario or not, just all over the place, said no matter what, like sometimes all a customer wants is an apology. We always say that when somebody complains online, what they're looking for is,
to be heard, right?
Right, to be heard. Acknowledgement, validation. They've been heard. Validation, they've been wronged. We want you to own it. And the problem is companies are so sensitive to owning it because then they think they're liable for something that we just can't even apologize to each other anymore. You know, just saying, "My bad. I'm so sorry that happened to you." Sorry that happened, period.
Yeah.
you know, it's just a human nature type of thing. It's just what we want. And most of the time, all you hear is they didn't even say sorry.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, right? You see a lot of, even these big things that have happened, we've covered them, the Snapchat thing with Rihanna, the Facebook thing, when they come out and say, we screwed up, we're sorry. It's almost refreshing to hear because you don't hear it.
Yeah.
And that has been one of the, the dehumanization of business, which has been a big thing, right? Removing the human touch, the human nature from business. Because also, and when you say I'm sorry, it almost stops you in your tracks. Remember the famous example I use on stage and we use it in the books is Delta. When they just replied to me, the diva on Twitter being upset I got hip checked by their flight attendants, they just said, truly sorry to hear this. We expect our flight attendants to be courteous at all time. Please accept my apology. I got nowhere to go with that. How am I going to reply to that? You're damn right. You're sorry. Right? It really is disarming. And the ability, now, mind you, this only applies in the province of Ontario. Please consult your local legal advice. But the I'm sorry is a lost art.
Our American listeners, you might still want to not say you're sorry.
I still say you should. But you can say I'm sorry it happened to you. You know, then you still don't admit to guilt, I think.
So I'm not going to read the headline. I'm just going to start reading this story.
Okay.
So it's from BuzzFeed. And it says, Mike Fish was driving for Uber 10 minutes outside of Boston when he picked up a second passenger in his Uber pool, who he said, seemed out of it, drowsy, almost sedated. When the drowsy passenger asked him if Boston Mass General Hospital was the nearest emergency room, that set off a red flag, Fish told BuzzFeed News. I said, do you need the ER? He said, yes. It came out that, over the last few days, he'd been passing out and losing consciousness. But instead of calling an ambulance to get to the urgent medical attention that he needed, the sick passenger called Uber Pool. Swing for the Uber by himself.
Yeah.
Uber Pool. The shared ride would save him a few bucks, but it meant he'd have to wait for Fish to drop off the first passenger before he'd get to the ER. Who's the jerk who sees the person, like, super sick, get into the Uber and is like, excuse me, sir, I was picked up first. You have to drop me off at my, I don't know, where do you go with an Uber? Home, I guess?
Jackass school.
I was a little nervous, Fish said. I didn't know what was going to happen. Ride-hail drivers are, by and large, untrained, self-employed workers driving their own cars on a part-time basis. They're not medical professionals. But as healthcare costs have risen and ride hail has become more pervasive, people are increasingly relying on Uber and Lyft drivers to get them to the hospital when they need emergency care. So, the title of this article is People Are Using Ubers as Ambulances and Drivers Hate It. Crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it says a recent yet to be peer reviewed study found that after Uber enters new markets, the rates of ambulance rides typically go down, meaning fewer people call professionals in favor of the cheaper option. People have always taken taxis to the hospital. There's the classic example of the woman going into labor in the back of the cab. But ride-hail technology makes it much easier, especially in less dense populated cities. The money-saving tactic might make sense for people in non-critical conditions, but it puts ride-hail drivers in an uncomfortable position. They're forced to choose between assuming potentially legal liability if something goes wrong, or dealing with a sense of guilt and the fear of getting a lower rating if they decline or cancel the ride. Fish didn't have much choice about taking the man to the emergency room. By the time that he learned where the rider was going and why, they were already on their way. This happens frequently. But in another instant, Fish willingly agreed to take someone to the ER, a restaurant kitchen worker who sliced his hand open while working. With Boston traffic, it was probably quicker than calling an ambulance. If you call an Uber, chances are they're going to be within a block or two. An ambulance won't be that close, Fish said. Said he didn't need the attention of a paramedic, so it ended up being pretty efficient. But legal professor and gig economy observer Vina Dubal told BuzzFeed that by allowing the injured man to get into his car and pressing the button to start the ride, Fish may have exposed himself to serious legal liability. You aren't liable if you refuse to take them, Dubal said. You're under no legal obligation to care for them until they get into your car, and then you're a proprietor conducting business. Is that the perfect example of something being like legal but not right?
100%.
Or right but not legal? Like, so someone calls the Uber driver to take them to the hospital. In this case, so an injury like slicing your hand open, obviously is very serious, but like you're not gonna it's unlikely you're gonna die immediately if you're not in the emergency room right away. So you see somebody with a bleeding hand, you get to make that decision. You can turn down the ride and make them take the ambulance, or a friend can drive them. They probably wouldn't be taking an ambulance for a cut hand anyway. But the person who gets in the car who's like dizzy and incoherent, yes, they yes. could be having a heart attack or 100%. A stroke, something really serious. So if you let them in the car, you could be sued. But if you don't let them in the car, you can't. Mm-hmm. But if you don't let them in the car, you're abandoning a person possibly yeah. in like a life-threatening position at the side of the road.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It says if Uber drivers were employees of Uber, then Uber would be liable if something bad happened to a passenger en route to the hospital. But because drivers are independent contractors, they would be held responsible for any failure to provide care during the business transaction. If you got in an Uber and you had a, like, you knew you're having possible serious medical situation, you opt out of calling an ambulance. You call an Uber. You get in the Uber. You have a stroke and something terrible happens. Is your family going to sue the Uber driver?
Yes.
Oh, my God. People are terrible. It says there have been cases where business owners haven't protected people from violence who walk onto their property, and the courts have said that there's a special relationship between the business owner and the customer, and the business owner acted negligently by not keeping the customer safe, Dubal said. In this case, the business owner would be the Uber driver once the rider gets in the car. As independent contractors, Uber and Lyft drivers can turn down any ride that makes them uncomfortable. The companies also charge riders for cleaning fees and repay drivers for the expense, though drivers say this practice is a major headache that can take weeks. Both companies said low ratings or demerits for canceling on a rider experiencing a medical emergency could be expunged from a driver's record.
Amazing. And it's just getting crazier. There's an article that came out that Uber and Lyft gave 65% more rides than taxis in New York 2 months ago.
Wow, that is crazy.
To 15 million trips per month. And it's even more, they said 65%, and it's even way higher than that in the outside, in the boroughs, outside of the main Manhattan. So it's getting more and more like this. People are like, well, but people have always called cabs to go to the hospital too. But like you said, cabs are protected under their employer.
Yeah.
Right, so that's a huge... It's a huge thing.
It says here, so when Fisher, a driver, picked up a young woman whose destination was Mercy Hospital, he didn't immediately suspect her ride was urgent. In fact, he'd gotten a ping from her during surge pricing, only to have her cancel the ride and rebook it a few minutes later when the surge went away. So she was bargain shopping. So he was surprised when, a few minutes into the trip, she asked him to pull over so she could throw up on the side of the road. Later, she told him she could barely walk and was experiencing the worst pain of her life. I was a little nervous when she got out to vomit, Fisher said. I haven't been in a situation like that. I haven't trained for that. I was torn between whether to call 911 or continue to the ER. But since I was only 2 minutes away, I figured I'd get there more quickly than an ambulance.
And if you call 911 and then an ambulance comes and she has to pay for the ambulance, they'll ding you for that.
Bigger problem is how much ambulances cost. Yeah. Can I just lay that out?
Yeah, of course. People are calling cabs.
If ambulances yes. didn't cost so much money and charge people like that, it's... Yep. In Canada, we don't pay for ambulances, do we?
There's a surcharge to it now, but not much.
Crazy.
Very, really small compared to what it is there. Wow. That's bananas.
So I drive my kids in the car. I don't want deathly ill people in my car, to be honest, one of the drivers said.
Yeah.
But it's like kind of also a human act, isn't it? If somebody was on the side of the road having like a heart attack, we would call an ambulance. You wouldn't throw them in your car, would you?
No. No, I'd call an ambulance.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, we got a Facebook post here from Renee Stockel, who posts, I was stuck on a Southwest Airlines flight with faulty Wi-Fi during tonight's Xavier Musketeers game. So this is during the big NCAA Final Four tournament. I tweeted at the airline to fuss about the weak signal and to make it up to me. They live tweeted the entire second half of the game to me.
It's amazing.
Xavier may have lost, but Mike from Southwest definitely won. So Renee posts, she has paid $8 for Wi-Fi in Southwest Air and isn't strong enough to stream March Madness. Hold down that fort for me, Xavier. And Southwest Airlines replied, sorry to disappoint, Renee. Please know we're limited to certain high bandwidth applications and website. And then, so that said, you know, they apologize, and she wrote back, "Thanks, Mike. Any chance you can live tweet the second half for me?" And he writes, "Gotcha, Mike," and then live tweeted the entire second half to her she could cover the plays and stuff. Like, that's wonderful. It's a nice way to do it. Even though I don't like flying you particularly, Southwest, due to your plane being all first come, first serve economy. Right? It is. I'm a snoot when it comes to...
I listened to the How I Built This, the podcast that we like, the NPR one.
With Herb.
About them.
It's Herb. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Just listen to him talk. I can listen to him talk all day. Yeah, he's pure great Texan. Accent. Pure Texan.
And love talking about starting the airline.
And how it works.
Yeah, and how it worked. It was a great, wonderful interview.
Yeah, you guys should go listen to that.
This is from, I don't know how to say the name of this website, so I'm not going to try. It says, Google Maps showing full screen ads using landmarks during navigation. It's been a few years since Google dropped its don't be evil motto and replaced it with do the right thing. But the ground reality hasn't changed much. The company still occasionally does things that one can safely say are neither good nor right. Enough rants. Let's come to the case in point. Google Maps users are complaining that full screen ads pop up while the app is being used for navigation. Given these ads, at least in the case above, and there's a picture we could... excuse me, put the link in the podcast notes, are about Google product software. It's safe to assume these are from Google itself. Needless to say, the move is not only annoying, but a safety hazard as well. The rollout seems to have been happening for some time, as we could also locate a tweet from December 2017 complaining about it, but it's definitely slow, as we couldn't find much reports online. Officially, the company hasn't said anything on it so far. Let us know if you're seeing such ads. Moving on, a new Google Maps feature is also being rolled out or tested in the US. Several users confirm the app is now using landmark-based navigation, as opposed to the distance-based technique that was being used up until now. Basically, for example, the app will say something like, turn left after the big red school or Taco Bell or whatever, instead of turn left after a distance. Going by the ongoing discussion on these tweets, it seems like some users are liking this new change. Others are skeptical about the feature, saying it could well be solely aimed at making money.
Yep.
So two things. First of all, when you're using navigation, you're not supposed to be looking at it.
Somewhat, yeah.
But what I'm saying is if the ad is visual, like if an ad comes up, I wouldn't even notice because I'm just listening to the navigation. Mm-hmm. So
I watch mine.
You're not, I don't think you're supposed
to. No, yeah, when a GPS goes up on your, near your dashboard, up in front. Really? I put mine right in front of the console where the speedometer is.
Oh, I didn't think you're supposed to be looking at them.
Yeah, it can be passively there where you, because it shows the turns coming up when you turn, yeah.
Okay. I don't have a problem with the location base, so I'm very bad at east, north, east, west, south. I'm very bad at that. So, like, if somebody gives me directions, I need them to say turn left, turn right. I'm not good at, like, putting myself in space and knowing what the directions are.
Yeah.
And so I used to have a lot of trouble with, like, when you used to get directions from at the very beginning, like when you'd get the MapQuest directions and you'd print them out, sometimes those would have like east, north, and I would have a lot of trouble with those. So I like that navigation now, it says left or right usually, which is so much better for me. But to be honest, like, this would be better for me because I'm not good at, I wouldn't mind if
I see their problem, though, right? Taco Bell sponsoring all of your turns. Turn left after the Taco Bell here. Turn right after the
whatever. I was thinking more that they could take you past things. Like, so we have a toll highway near where we live. And so sometimes the directions will always, unless you opt not to use the toll highway, the directions will always take you to the toll highway, which I assume is somehow a sponsored. Oh, you think it's speed?
It is speed, but that gives the opportunity to sponsor it to make you go past something or go on to something.
Yeah, I was thinking if I was a restaurant, let's say, and if I could pay Google Maps to always lead people that were going down my street, like past my restaurant, I would totally pay for that. So, I mean, I can see how that could be. Do you know how to say the name of this website?
Punica Web.
Punica Web. Sorry, that's where...
P-I-U-N-I-K-A.
It's where the article is from, Punica Web.
Got another article here for you. I saw this, somebody shared it on LinkedIn. It's what honeybees can teach marketers.
I've been waiting to hear this.
I'm going to sum up this article for you, and the answer is they can't teach you anything.
But I want to learn from honeybees. It's a stretch.
It's just something that I'm not reading the article. It's just something that gets me so angry that we just try to relate stuff, whether it's current events, whether this, we're just reaching.
I'm okay with the honeybees as long as it's not like, there's no holiday associated with my. I always hate when it's like holiday associated. So like, you know, what can St. Valentine teach you about marketing? That makes me crazy.
No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk about
bees
it.
Bees are very industrious creatures.
Yeah, they're not humans. Humans are not. Humans aren't. You can't learn anything from them. Nothing. This is from the stars, a story we had a while ago.
You're angry about the honeybees.
It's ridiculous. It's the worst of content marketing there is.
I don't know. I think you might learn something.
Nothing. At all. This is BC Bride order to pay photographer. $115,000 after online defamation campaign. So this is kind of an update to a story we talked about before. British Columbia bride has been... You thought it was really funny, didn't you? You're still laughing at your own joke.
You said B.
You're not helping, Wayne.
You laughed at it, too.
It's a serious news show.
He laughed about it, too. Sorry, do you want to start your article again? Say B again.
The west coast of Canada. A bride has been ordered to pay more than $100,000 to a wedding photographer for unleashing an online torrent of defamatory comments that eventually destroyed the business. The West Coast Province Supreme Court judgment says the attack on the integrity, ethics, and reputation of Amara Wedding and its owner, Kitty Chan, was carried out by bride Emily Liao with all of her might. In his ruling in February, Justice Gordon Wetherill says Liao's mission was to expose what she wrongly perceived as a corrupt business. He says Liao used the internet so her views would be widely read and cause as much damage as possible to Chan's reputation and business, and the goal was successful, Wetherill said. The case is an example of the dangers of using the internet to publish information without proper regard for its accuracy. The decision says Liao hired Chan to photograph her July 4th, 2015 wedding and provide a package of services valued at just over $6,000. But days before the nuptials, Liao disapproved of the wedding pre-wedding photos and stopped payment. Chan's staff completed the contract and withheld the photos and videos pending full payment, prompting Liao to begin a small claims action that ended in 2016 entirely in favor of the photographer. But before the small claims decision, Justice Gordon Wetherill says Liao maintained an unrelenting, nearly year-long assault using Chinese and English language social media sites to accuse Chan and her business of everything from lying to consumers to extortion and fraud. Liao testified in court that she posted the publications because she had been deceived and lied to and thought the contract had been breached. She claimed the defense of fair comment, that her statements were a matter of public interest and based on fact. But Wetherill says Liao failed to prove the statements were true. Indeed, the evidence is overwhelming that none of them were true. There is no doubt that Liao was dissatisfied with what she perceived as poor quality wedding photographs. However, she has failed to prove that her displeasure was justified. Wetherill awarded Chan $75,000 in general damages and found Liao's high-handed or oppressive conduct merited aggravated damages of $15,000 and $25,000 in punitive damages for what he calls persistent malice. Liao and others who think it's acceptable to use the internet as a vehicle to vent their frustrations must be given the message that there will be consequences if their publications are defamatory. The judge also noted Liao's false allegations posted on Chinese language blogs, forums, and social media sites were aimed specifically at causing tremendous harm to Chan's reputation with her mainly Chinese clientele. In awarding Chan the total of $115,000, Wetherill said he found there was no coincidence between the start of Liao's cyber tirade and the sudden evaporation of Chan's previously healthy wedding business. Amara Wedding laid off its employees and closed in January 2017. Chan continues to work with her husband, Kevin Leung, assisting him in the role as wedding officiant, although the judgment says the services offered by the couple are not as extensive as Chan's previous business. So, somebody got nailed for finally, lying about the business.
And bullying, it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like super aggressive, too.
Yeah, and that was...
I understand being angry and voicing your opinion and stuff, but you can't ruin someone's...
When you get mad and
entire
it goes,
business.
Goes viral, you can't stop the buzz.
That was a good B joke.
Thanks. We got a double made-up word.
Don't make any sense.
This is from Michelle Kiss, and the words are marketecture and brandividual.
Marketecture and brandividual. Both need no explanation.
They're terrible words. They're just nauseating words.
And she sent them at the same time. Like that was like the jackpot.
You know who would never say marketecture or brandividual?
Who?
Bees. I They would never do that to you. You could learn that from them. Bees never say marketecture. No bee in the history of time has ever said marketecture or brand visual.
All right, honey. That's enough. We out. Bye-bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.